Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
How short is your memory? Have you forgotten this moment from the Oscars yet?
Forgive me. I must start by pointing out that 3 years after a horrific financial crisis caused by massive fraud, not a single financial executive has gone to jail. And that's wrong.
That was Charles Ferguson, winner of the Academy Award for Best Feature-Length Documentary for his film Inside Job about the financial crisis. Well, yesterday's New York Times had a long and super detailed article about why no one has gone to prison for the banking and housing collapse, while plenty of people did for the savings and loan meltdown of the 1980s, which, by the way, was not nearly as bad. And if the Justice Department or state attorneys general need a law school refresher course, reporters Gretchen Morgenson and Louise Story provide a list of specific crimes that they might charge certain investment firm executives with if they have the stomach for the fight, according to legal analysts. New York Times correspondent Louise Story joins me now. Thanks so much for coming on, Louise. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Your article begins with Timothy Geithner, then the head of the New York Fed, and Andrew Cuomo, then the New York State Attorney General, talking to each other in October 2008, which, of course, was the very depths of the crisis when we didn't know if we were heading for a full-fledged depression or a banking collapse or what. And you kind of suggest that Geithner asked Cuomo to call off the dogs on some criminal probes he was working on related to the housing bubble. What happened between Cuomo and Geithner?
So we've spoken with three people who heard about that very unusual meeting from them at the time. And at the time, back in October 2008, the meeting made a very big impression because it was so unusual to have the head of the New York Fed coming in when he had a lot of other things to do. Remember, they had just done the bank bailout. He was running AIG. And he comes in and meets with New York Attorney General. And he reiterates how very worried they are about the financial system. And, you know, the idea is that at that moment, they didn't want a hard-charging attorney general throwing a bunch of subpoenas around. And that was just one of many moments that we saw in the last few years where there were subtle messages, decisions that might seem small but sent out the message across prosecutors and the government to slow down.
Let me drill down a little bit on that same example just because it was New York and it's Cuomo. What specifically was Cuomo investigating at that time, and what's the status of that investigation today?
Well, there'd be two relevant investigations. Cuomo was really one of the earliest to start looking at mortgage securities. He subpoenaed all of the banks and the rating agencies back in the summer of 2007, before most people really realized we were having a crisis. And he had all this in-depth information about how they packaged loans into mortgage bonds. So that's something he never brought a case in. He had all that information. He got a bunch of very detailed information from a firm called Clayton Holdings, which showed just how much the banks knew about how crummy those loans were, but they didn't tell it to the rating agencies or investors. So he had that one going. And then in the fall of 2008, right after the New York Fed bailed out AIG, Cuomo got very concerned about bonuses that AIG was going to pay to workers there, even though they were on the taxpayer dole. And so the week that he met with Geithner, he had just sent out a press release and so on about how he was cracking down on those bonuses. And on the AIG matter, he never took any legal action with AIG, but he did, 6 months after that meeting, come out and publicly shame them again, which got some AIG workers to give bonuses back. But again, he didn't file a suit or anything of that sort.
And then he got an elected governor, so his attention shifted. But did you ask the new attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, if he's pursuing either of those cases?
So I have not heard from Schneiderman's office what they're pursuing. I've asked earlier this year, and, you know, they seem to be sorting out what they've got there. Of course, Cuomo did leave one financial crisis-related case for them. Right as he was leaving in December, Cuomo filed a lawsuit against Ernst & Young, the accounting firm, saying that it was responsible for Lehman's misleading accounting leading up to the financial crisis. And so that was a financial crisis case. Now people criticize that, saying, okay, well, why sue only the accountants? Why aren't you suing executives from Lehman Brothers? He did not.
My guest is New York Times correspondent Louise Story on why no criminal charges have been brought yet in connection with the financial crisis. So let's go bigger picture. And my favorite part of the article is your list of possible charges for prosecutors to explore, mm-hmm. as provided by legal experts. And I'm just going to take a minute and read three paragraphs from your article for our listeners, because I couldn't possibly summarize them any better than you wrote them.
I'm flattered.
And it says, investigators, they argue, could look more deeply at the failure of executives to fully disclose the scope of the risks on their books during the mortgage mania, or the amounts of questionable loans they bundled into security sold to investors that soured. Prosecutors also could pursue evidence that executives knowingly awarded bonuses to themselves and colleagues based on overly optimistic valuations of mortgage assets, in effect creating illusory profits that were wiped out by subsequent losses on the same assets. And they might also investigate whether executives cashed in shares based on inside information or misled regulators and their own boards about looming problems. Merrill Lynch, for example, understated its risky mortgage holdings by hundreds of billions of dollars. And public comments made by Angelo Mozzillo, the chief executive of Countrywide Financial, praising his mortgage company's practices, were at odds with derisive statements he made privately in emails as he sold shares. The stock subsequently fell sharply as the company's losses became known. Executives at Lehman Brothers assured investors in the summer of 2008 that the company's financial position was sound, even though they appeared to have counted as assets certain holdings pledged by Lehman to other companies, according to a person briefed on that case. At Bear Stearns, the first major Wall Street player to collapse, a private litigant says evidence shows that the firm's executives may have pocketed revenues that should have gone to investors to offset losses when complex mortgage securities soured. So, wow, Louise, you've got legal expert sources laying out now.
We can keep them busy in the government, huh?
Yeah, really. Not only what charges they could bring, but against whom and for what. Did you get a rebuttal from the Justice Department or any state attorneys general or anyone else as to why some of those cases aren't being brought?
We asked the DOJ and we asked the SEC about where the cases were. And what they sent to us was a list of cases they have brought that they are proud about. And we posted that list on our website with the story. I'll just tell you for the listeners, you know, for instance, a couple of the largest cases that they pointed to as success would be a case they brought against an executive at Taylor Bean Whitaker, a mortgage company in Florida, and a relatively small bank called Colonial Bank. So that's what they pointed us to as their success. Of course, the SEC also had the big case against Goldman Sachs, but that's not one that the DOJ followed up, so there are no criminal charges there. So they just pointed us to those cases, and they also told us that they are continuing on in their investigations. So, you know, it's possible we'll see some other things coming out.
Listeners, any questions for Louise Story? This is one. In fact, on the show today, we're doing two of the most common questions and requests for segments that we get from listeners. One is to look more closely at fracking and natural gas, which we did last hour. And today, or this hour, on the question of why nobody has gone to jail in connection with the financial crisis for Louise Story, who co-authored with Gretchen Morgenson a long, long piece on this in yesterday's Times. So if you want to get in and ask a question, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet your question at Brian Lehrer on Twitter, or post it to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. And let's take a phone call right now. Here is Gary in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Shouldn't the title of the article be Why the Obama Administration Seems to Have Stopped Possible Prosecutions? And then, because you didn't really explain why. It's already been a couple of years now.
Well, there we go. I think that's the part that we're up to. So thank you for setting it up. And Louise, how much is this an Obama administration decision not to go after these folks?
Well, the decisions started during the Bush administration, but they've been continued on. For instance, remember, these cases take a long time, so we have to look back at decisions 3-4 years ago during the Bush administration. And for instance, we discovered that in the spring of 2008, the top person in the criminal division at the FBI did a big study and wanted to deploy a lot more FBI agents across the country on financial fraud, mortgage fraud. He wanted to look at people, you know, mortgage brokers all the way up to the tops of executives at companies. And he sent out a memo and told field agents to redeploy. And there was pushback from the DOJ. And a week later, he had to send out another memo saying, well, if you want to opt out of that, call us. And so by doing that in 2008, that means that not as many people who were deployed on investigations, and you needed them doing that then in order to have cases now. Another example is we talked about the SEC in 2008. They became concerned about banks that had bailout money. And so starting at the end of 2008, when it was still under the Bush administration, they started talking about a policy not to put too heavy of penalties on bailed out banks. Well, they developed the policy under Bush, but it continued under Obama when Mary Shapiro, the head of the SEC, came in. She was briefed on it, and they kept it. Now, that policy may not have been used all that much, right, because there weren't many cases that came out while banks had bailout money. But again, it sent a signal to the investigators at the SEC about how hard to work and how fast to go on their cases against banks who had gotten bailed out money.
You also wrote that the DOJ, the Department of Justice, did create a financial crisis crimes task force, but that the administration's interest in health care fraud may have been distracting attention from it.
So you're going back to the 1990s?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was 2009. Am I wrong?
So we wrote about, you know, we tried to take a long view on this, and we wrote about how there were so many cases during the SNL crisis. But you see the number of cases drop in the 1990s when the Clinton administration put a push on health care investigations. You see them pick up a little in the early part of the Bush administration around all those accounting frauds.
Was the 90s. I got that mixed up.
That was the 90s, yep.
All right, let's take another call. Lionel in Brighton Beach. You're on WNYC. Hello, Lionel.
Hello. And when Spitzer was governor in January 2004, he was suing the federal government against predatory lending, which he thought was one of the fraud things that was going on. And he was suing him January 2004, and he had all the attorney generals were with him then. And when Cuomo the Bush administration said you can't control national banks. National banks are the federal government's control, and they took it over and they didn't do nothing. And I don't know what happened to that lawsuit.
Lionel, I'm going to leave it there. How much does he have right there? And I know he spoke in generalities, but was Spitzer, when he was attorney general ending in 06, that was 2 years, almost three, before the financial crisis. But was he hot on the trail of some of the same stuff?
Spitzer. Well, you know, 2006 was a little early for most people to recognize the signs in the housing market. So there really wasn't anyone in law enforcement who was aggressively going after.
He was going after Wall Street firms.
But not financial crisis, mortgage, housing-related cases. He went after other things. Like, you know, one of his famous settles was over the analyst research on Wall Street. He had a settlement over that because the analysts were very conflicted in the ratings and the commentary they were giving on companies, stocks they rated.
You have a second story in yesterday's paper about a new Senate report just released on Wednesday that does name names as culprits in the financial crisis. Here is Senator Carl Levin of Michigan.
Why would Goldman deny what is so obvious, that they were engaged in a huge short in the year 2007? Why would they deny it? Because they gained at the expense of their clients, and they used abusive practices to do it.
So what, was Carl Levin trying to scoop you?
Well, you know, they've been working on that report for a year. But the other thing that Levin said on Wednesday, which I thought was very interesting, is he said that he believes the SEC has been slow to act. And he said he hoped they would, you know, get going on these cases. And so that jived exactly with, you know, the evidence we found over the last few years of regulators, bank regulators, holding back on cases.
There was the big civil suit brought against Goldman Sachs, which you mentioned, and he's talking about Goldman there, that brought a $500 million settlement. For the purposes of your article, did you not count that as a financial crisis prosecution?
We mentioned it there, but it was a civil case, and we were mostly trying to answer the question people have about criminal cases, you know, cases where people would go to jail, in the words of, you know, the inside job line from the Academy Awards. And so that was a civil case. And in addition, that did not involve any senior executives. So the only person named in that Goldman case, you know, was a young trader from France, Fabrice Tour. So we mentioned our story that was an exception. That was something they did do. But again, it wasn't a criminal case, and it did not involve a bank executive.
Do you think criminal charges are more important than civil ones in this realm for some reason?
No, I absolutely do not. I think they're both important. But criminal charges is what we haven't seen yet. And so we, in the article, we were writing about both, but we definitely felt like we needed to ask the question for criminal charges as well as civil charges.
We read that list of potential cases against potential companies. David in Riverdale has another one. Hi, David. You're on WNYC.
Yes. My concern in this whole process has been basically that the issue of the ratings agency has been ignored. I mean, you know, in the general corporate sector, when a company says that their sales are, you know, $2 billion, you look at them and say, that's nice. What do the auditors say? In this setting, you know, when they said that all these mortgages that were packaged were AAA, you say, that's nice. But what do the rating agencies say? And they called them all AAA, and
right,
clearly they weren't AAA.
Right. So is there any potential criminal wrongdoing, Louise, on the part of the rating agencies? I know there's been a lot of talk about how they were too close to some of these banks. The banks pay them, so they're taking money from the clients to rate the client's product. Any whiff of criminal wrongdoing?
Well, the big question is whether the rating agencies were duped by the banks. You know, maybe the banks were giving them wrong information or misleading them, or, you know, whether if there was wrongdoing here, were they complicit? You know, again, the thing to remember, though, in this whole storyline and these questions is, you know, it's not absolutely clear whether there was wrongdoing at all. So it could, you know, a lot of people say that this was a crisis of stupidity, not of wrongdoing. But there's a lot of litigation, private litigation from investors out there. People are entities like CalPERS, you know, the hedge fund in California is suing the rating agencies. And it'll be interesting to see if they, in discovery, uncover some of some evidence that would answer that question.
If this was a crisis of stupidity and not criminality, why would the savings and loan crisis of the 1980s have been so different? Because that's a large part of your article, you know, also describing how much criminal prosecution was brought after that.
Well, it was different because back then, the second that crisis started, the government put a lot of resources into creating task force with, you know, hundreds of lawyers to get aggressive on this. They also required bank regulators to refer cases to the task force. And, you know, it's really the bank regulators who know what's going on in these companies. And we looked at data on referrals from bank regulators to the DOJ, and we have that on our website. And you can see it went up a ton during the savings and loans crisis. It fell a lot in the mid-90s. It had a little spike up around WorldCom, Enron, but it just stayed down, and it has not climbed during the financial crisis. So bank regulators, you know, the OCC and the Federal Reserve, they're not sending over a significant number of things for the DOJ to check out.
So last thing, and it's a question on our comments page at WNYC.org from David in Manhattan, who writes, I don't understand why Mozilla from Countrywide and Castrano, is he also Countrywide?
Cassano from AIG, probably.
Cassano. He wrote Castrano. Okay, have not been charged. There are clear public statements they made that are false, and we have contemporaneous emails they made where they indicate that they knew the falsity of the statements. So his question is, if you can't charge these guys, who can you ever charge? So what are the prospects going forward?
Well, you know, the two of those individuals, Mozilla from Countrywide and Cassano from AIG, those are two cases the DOJ has already decided to close. that they will not be charging them. So they would have to go back and reopen the cases. Who else to charge? I mean, I'll refer you to the list that, you know, you read earlier to the listeners about what legal experts told us.
Any reaction to your article since it's been out in the last day, especially from the Justice Department?
We haven't heard from the Justice Department, but, you know, we've heard from a lot of people who are very interested in this. Some of them have had other interesting reasons. There might not be cases which, you know, we're looking at to possibly put into future articles. So stay tuned.
Louise Story, business and economics correspondent for The New York Times, her long article with Gretchen Morgenson in yesterday's paper about why no one has been charged criminally in connection with the financial crisis. Listeners, you can keep this conversation going on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Louise, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, who's in charge when disaster strikes? It's a small number of elites. How do they use that power? Stay with us.